Awesome. Man, Tom is so gifted, and I love the way that he asks questions. And some of you are sitting right, you're sitting in these seats right now, and you're feeling a little rattled. Like, I don't know if I like exactly what his undercurrent was. Not sure that I appreciate what was being implied, but here's what I love, is he said, somebody asked me a question about what I believed, and they never stopped to listen to my answer. And there are thousands of people that come across those who consider themselves to be followers of Jesus every day, and all they hear are speeches. They don't get any questions. And I had a couple people email me over these last few weeks and say, well, why are we bringing an atheist in at all? I said, to listen. We had a speaker a couple weeks ago who quoted a medieval saint who said, all truth is God's truth. And if that is true, we have something to learn from everybody who crosses our path. And I learned that my worldview is only stretched when I run across things that call it into question. So I don't think that we need to be afraid of the questions. Moreover, we might need to be afraid of a faith that doesn't allow room for any. So, with that being said, I would love for you to welcome our guest for tonight, Mr. Hemant Mehta.
Hi.
Thanks for stopping by, man. How was your trip?
Oh, yeah, I was just on the way, you know. It was good so far.
Awesome. Hemant, you're teaching...
Teaching
what? Where?
High school math in a suburb of Chicago.
You're a brave man. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
A lot of people have heard about the book. For the people who haven't read it, could you back up a little bit and just kind of start with your story? Family background and kind of your faith transition into unfaith, non-faith, rational
atheism,
thinking.
That works.
Yeah, that stuff.
Well, the gist of the story is I was raised in a family. Our religion was Jainism, small Indian religion. Most people haven't heard of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, growing up in that faith, whatever, I was a practicing Jain. We're nonviolent. We're vegetarian. Outside of the theology, though, my family moved a few times when I was growing up. And at one point, you know, it was really devastating. Didn't want to move. But it got me thinking, you know, in a very admittedly hasty way of thinking, like, this is the worst thing that has ever happened to anyone ever, this moving. Okay. Like, no one has it worse than I do. and I started questioning all this stuff about God that I was raised with, all these thoughts about religion. And I'm thinking, if God really loved me, why is God doing this to me?
Yeah.
There must not be a God.
Gotcha.
Stupidest thought ever. Because, I mean, any religious person could tell you, well, you know, God's doing this for a reason, things like that. But it got me questioning my faith for the first time. And I didn't know any atheists. I didn't know any agnostics, really. I knew one agnostic, maybe. But I started thinking about these questions, trying to look it up online, like, what happens if you don't believe what your faith teaches you?
Yeah.
And it kind of led, all these things pointed to atheism, that maybe there just isn't a God.
Okay.
And I started thinking about that for a while, and it took a while before I finally came to the terms that, you know what, I think that describes where I'm at right now.
Okay.
And so that's where I'm coming from.
Awesome.
The way the book happened then is, you know, after years of working with atheist organizations, starting some groups, working with some national groups, I realized I'd never been to a Christian church or a synagogue or a mosque or anything outside my own faith. And I want to go, but I can't just sit in those seats right there and tap the person next to me and say, really, you believe this stuff? Why do you believe this stuff? That seems kind of rude. and all of a sudden I heard of... on eBay, someone was selling this grilled cheese sandwich with the Virgin Mary on it.
Right, right. Epic.
And that seemed kind of religious in a crazy sort of way. And I thought, well, why don't I just auction off the chance for someone to send me to any place of worship they want to?
Yeah.
I'll donate the money. It's not about that. But they could say, you know what? I want you to go to this church. I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is. So you had Christians bidding. I go to their church. You had atheists bidding. I don't go to church.
Right.
They just kind of set each other off.
That's awesome.
And...
the glory of eBay.
Yeah. Ultimately, a pastor from Seattle won and said, why don't you go to a whole bunch of different Christian churches and write about it for me.
So on that first run, how many churches did you visit?
For that guy, Jim Henderson, I went to 10 churches around Chicago. Okay. They were there was Willow Creek, like evangelical church. There was Salem Baptist, a big African-American church. There was a guy's church in his living room because it wasn't that big.
Okay.
I mean, all sorts of stuff.
Amazing. And then how did that experience evolve into the broader experiment that gets captured in the book.
Yeah, well, I was writing about my experiences going to these churches, what I liked, didn't like, what I was turned off by a lot of times. And I was writing about this on Jim's ministry's website.
Okay.
And, you know, Jim had written a book for a Christian publisher a while back, and they kept tabs on him, and this story was getting some publicity. So, you know, they were looking at what I was writing, how this is going for their author, you know, and what they saw was that when I was writing about churches, good stuff and bad stuff, a lot of Christians and atheists were talking about these, they were having conversations about this, and they weren't yelling at each other, and they weren't trying to preach at each other one way or the other, they were just having a serious conversation about this. So they said, you know what, when you're done going to these churches for Jim, why don't we send you to more churches across the country, and we'll put that into a book. And that's how I sold my soul on eBay came about.
And after the 10, you were willing to go to more.
To more, yes. that's the reaction I get from a lot of atheists.
Gotcha.
And some Christians.
Yeah, well, no doubt. You know what? Pam's giving me my awesome sign. I forgot to take the offering because I'm bad like that. So if Kansas is your church home, now's a great chance to do that. If you're just visiting, just let it slide you by. You know the drill. So you went from 10 to 25. What were, like, starting with the easy things, what were the things that turned you off?
The things that turned me off?
Yeah.
Well, I have a list right now.
Yeah. Is it a scroll?
Yeah. You know, the things that I think everyone here probably likes, I like too. I like being greeted at the door. I liked having having this genuine sense of community at a lot of places. What I didn't like is, you know, a lot of the pastors you saw on stage, some of them utterly boring.
Okay.
Some of them said things that, you know, I'm looking around me. Everyone's just nodding their heads, smiling, and, you know, I'm hearing what they're saying, and I'm thinking, either that didn't happen, that's not real. I think I know more history about this stuff than you do.
Gotcha.
Things like that. Or they said things that just offended me.
Okay.
And they were kind of saying everyone who's not part of our club, our group, our church, they're wrong, they're evil, they're bad, we need to convert them. I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm sitting here. What are you going to do to me?
Right. right.
You know, things like that. But I'm thinking, why doesn't anyone in the church bring this up? Why am I the only person thinking this in the room? I hope not.
Gotcha.
So those are the things. I'm just like, I can't believe people just let that slide or don't fact check what the pastor's saying.
Yeah, yeah. So were there other things that you found to be like pleasant surprises?
There were. I mean,
or maybe they weren't pleasant. They were just something that you would have had no way of anticipating.
I didn't realize some churches. I mean, I heard of like, oh, look, churches are like these rock star type of extravaganzas or something. But I didn't realize that when you go there, some of the sermons, even though I disagreed with a lot of what they were saying, they were actually interesting to listen to. And you know, in your head, my image of church was like, oh, it's like what they have on The Simpsons, where it's some boring monotone guy talking,
right,
and
right.
Everyone wants to get out and things like that. And at a lot of the places, it wasn't like that. And that was nice to see. I mean, it's an interesting place to go.
Yeah.
I liked some of those places that I went to where, despite me not agreeing with what they were saying, they did get me thinking. And I drove away like with those thoughts in my head, like, yeah, how come I'm not living my life in a certain way? And it has nothing to do with whether or not I agree with the Bible or agree with Christianity. It's just, oh, those are really good questions to think about. And, you know, I never realized that churches like that, and so many of them, could do that.
Gotcha. Awesome. Heaven and I are going to continue our conversation, but if you didn't get a half sheet when you came in, you just got part of your program, if you came and you have a question for Heaven, or if you came and you have a question for me, or if you have a question for both of us, just write that out on your sheet of paper and then just lift it up. And then our team, as soon as they're done doing what they're doing now, will take those questions and make sure that they get to my buddy Danny, and then Danny's going to bring them up on stage. So if you have questions as we go, or if you have questions that you already know that you want to ask, please feel free to write those down, and we're going to get to them in just a little bit. So some of the questions that you drove away asking, like, do you have any of those that you'd be willing to kind of share?
Sure. Well, let me give you one that just really got me thinking. And it kind of refers back to that video you played about the upcoming series you guys have. At one church I went to, they started talking about, you know, this image of Christianity is not a very good one right now. It seems like if you ask unchurched people on the street, like, what do you think of Christianity? They're going to give you a pretty negative response.
Right.
And they were like, that's horrible. I mean, no one has it as bad as we do as Christians. And I'm driving away thinking, you know what? I just applied for a job. And if I wrote on that job application, you know, I volunteered with my church for the past 5 years, that would probably look good on my application.
Okay.
If I wrote down the truth, which is that I've spent 5 years working with atheist organizations, I'd be rejected.
Okay.
If they wanted to run for public office, they could do it. I would not get elected, and no chance of getting elected. I mean,
okay.
No, I don't think you have it as bad as some other people do. Those were questions I started thinking about. Things, you know, they had one series I went to had something about family, and are you spending enough time with your family? Are you showing them that you care instead of just like, oh, my kid did something cute today? Well, are you really showing them that you mean that?
Okay.
And I'm like, you know, when was the last time I told my parents I love them, my sister, you know, when was the last time I did that sort of stuff?
Gotcha.
And you don't hear that a lot of places outside of church, frankly. Not even in atheist places, but like, you know, how come we're not doing that?
Okay.
So those were good questions.
So were there any of those questions that you couldn't hear on Dr. Phil or Oprah? Like, there's a lot of good, kind of noble, epic,
yeah.
be a better contribution to civil society kind of questions. The culture is asking, was there anything that was unique to churches that piqued your interest, or was it all just kind of like a spiritual rehash of stuff that was already out there?
You know, one of the things that was really amazing to me, one of these churches, they did like seeker services. They wanted mm-hmm. things catered directly to people who were not part of the church. And one of the things they talked about is, you know, if you really want to reach out to someone who's not part of the church, you know, you got to connect with them on an emotional level. And it's almost a little game for some of them, like, put the target on their back as soon as you see them and go get them.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things they were saying is, you know, if you understand the tragedy that's in their life right now, because, you know, if I tell someone I'm an atheist, if they're religious and I'm like, yeah, I'm an atheist, they're like, what happened in your life? What's wrong?
Gotcha.
Nothing's wrong. I just don't believe it. And they seem to, a lot of these places I went to seem to think that the only way you could, the only reason people aren't part of the church is because of some emotional reason. And if you connect with them emotionally, they will come to Christ, or they will come to our church.
Gotcha.
There are other reasons people aren't Christian, and I think they missed the point of that. I don't think I'm answering your question at all.
That's okay. It must not have been a very good one. When I was reading the book, I thought about the series that we're getting ready to do, and you tell a story about just getting a lot of different press, and there's one Christian personality who got you on their radio show. What happened?
I get on a Christian radio show, and I'm thinking, this is right when that auction happened and the pastor won the auction, and I'm thinking, they're going to spend a few minutes talking about this auction, so nothing too bad. I get on the show. 2 minutes we spend talking about my auction. Then Kirk Cameron spends 38 minutes telling me why I'm going to hell.
And that made you feel...
It was the best day of my life.
Awesome.
Really, but I mean, come on, how many people can say Kirk Cameron like made fun of them for... And not only that, he didn't just do it to my face. When I got home and I downloaded the episode from their website, I could hear what went on after I hung up the phone. And after I hung up the phone, I believe the first words were, ladies and gentlemen, we just got off the phone with a fool. Not our words, the Bible's words. And then they made more fun of me for... That's Christian love, you know.
We should have a lot of credibility for both the scriptures and those who claim to believe it.
And why I don't really want to watch Growing Pains ever again.
Yeah, that'll do it. And like when I hear that and I think about the series, I need to let you know I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry that went down. I'm sorry that somebody who claims to put their confidence in the same code that I did was able to come out with a radically different set of behaviors than what I see modeled.
And while I appreciate that apology and I appreciate the sentiment of, you know, let's apologize for some of the things we do, I mean, that's nice, but what would make more of a difference is, well, you're sorry, yes, but stop doing it.
Yeah.
And not that you're doing it.
Right.
But more importantly, what gets me really upset when it comes to those types of things is, you know, from the world I'm in, which is kind of immersed in this atheist culture,
yeah.
I see a lot of my people, like, you know, we go on the defensive, like, can you believe this Christian person did this or said this about us? Without getting into any politics here, there was a person running for high office in this country who smeared her opponent by saying she hangs out with atheists. And that was a smear campaign used against it. And I'm thinking, well, don't apologize on behalf of that sort of action. Just stop doing it for one, but... On the other hand, if you see other Christians acting in a way that you think is unchristian or
yeah.
not something Jesus would do, call them out on it. Why do I have to be the one who has to, you know, play defense on this? Why do I have to be the one that keeps saying that's wrong? Why don't I see some pastors or some churches saying, you know what that other pastor did last weekend or what we heard about in the news, That's not what we do at our church. That's not what we should do as Christians. I wish I saw more of that. I don't.
And that's epic. I mean, it rings true at every possible level. If you read the scriptures, Proverbs says that we need to be a voice for the voiceless. I'm not saying that Hemant is incapable of speaking for himself, but in a lot of Christian circles, you'll immediately be discounted as somebody with no credibility based on your worldview. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes the critique for people is best heard when it's coming from people that they perceive to be their allies, to be able right. to say, hey, this might feel good, and it might bump your ratings, and it might be culturally acceptable, but the way that we understand the person of Jesus, the way that we uphold values of kindness and gentleness and respect and compassion doesn't look yeah. like that.
It would mean so much more coming from you than it would coming from me in those types of issues. I know one of the things we've done, like some of the groups I work with, we've done protests trying to protect a separation of church and state, things like that. And I think one of the most valuable things that could happen is when we have Christians with us that say, you know what? We want to protect our right to believe in Christ and to have this church, and we think we agree with you that right. there should be the separation. And they're on our side, and like you could have tons of atheists saying this, but if you have a couple of pastors that are saying it too, people are going to listen to them.
Right.
You have the power to change all this stuff that you're saying sorry for.
Yeah.
You have much more of a power to change that than I ever could.
It's great. I think that one of the things that you noted in one of your lectures that I caught a piece of on YouTube is that you said that, and you can correct me if I misheard you, but that your challenge, your frustration isn't so much with people of faith as it is with people who attempt to legislate morality. Did I get the
yeah,
essence
no,
of that?
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, I know there are some atheists that would love it if just all religion went away and stuff like that, and I don't count myself among them. I'm an atheist. I'm fine with that. I don't really care what you are, and it's fine if you believe whatever it is you believe. I think the only time I get annoyed and where I really get defensive about it is when I see people trying to say, this is what we think, this is how our church acts, therefore we need to sign this into law, and everyone right. needs to act this way. Well, not everyone believes what you believe, and that's really the gist of what, you know, when you see all those stories about atheists trying to fight against something, because
yeah.
there's always a lawsuit with atheists
right.
of some sort,
right.
and every time you see that, it's always something I would hope other Christians would be wanting as well.
Right.
Yeah, so.
And it's fascinating that you say that, because on your site, The Friendly Atheist, you've made reference to certain students who have, you know, petitioned to have a song with religious overtones removed from a school event. And I was brought back to my high school experience, where when my principal found out that I was a part of a Bible study that met on campus, off school hours, with a couple of other sophomores, I was instructed that I didn't have the legal right to do that, and that if I continued to do so, my disciplinary standing with the school would be in jeopardy. I didn't have any other problems, and we just kind of didn't have the time or the energy or the money for a lawsuit, yeah. so we walked away.
And that's horrible.
And what a lot of Christians don't understand in hindsight is when they hear an atheist group petitioning for time and access and resources, they're like, well, I don't know if I want that in school. You have to understand that if they lose, you lose.
Right.
And at the end of the day, if what we believe about Scripture to be free will is true, God gives people the right to make their own choices. And if we try to create frameworks or boundaries for them, we start stripping their capacity to choose for themselves.
And I think if you ask just about any atheist, if there's any in the audience or any that you know, if you ask them, you know, what do you think about what your principal did when you wanted to start that group or something, or you wanted to hold that meeting, I think most atheists would be on your side. You
right.
have every right to start that group and form the meeting, but you wouldn't hear that story in the news or something like that.
Right. Right, and I think that ultimately there are a couple issues where we actually do line up. I run into a lot of people, and I could be treading on thin ice here, who aren't so sure that church and state should be separated. But if you look at the history of Christianity, as soon as the government began to tacitly endorse the faith started to lose its power and its ability to speak into issues of culture. If you actually trace the history of followers of Jesus, you'll see that they expanded most rapidly when they were under persecution. Their voice was heard most clearly when they were speaking in protest against the dominant Roman Empire of the day. As soon as the church got wrapped into the government, the church didn't have to scrap so hard to have a voice, mm-hmm. and because it needed to stay in power, it ended up dumbing down some of the things that made it what it was.
And I don't think anyone's calling for, like, to teach atheism or anything like that either. It's just saying, you know what, if you want your beliefs, that's fine. Keep them at church. Keep them at home. Let your family teach you things like that. Let's not legislate that.
Yeah, and some people say, well, you know, if the church loses its standing in the public square, if the government doesn't fund church things, then the church will die. Well, if the church is doing its job, the church will be just fine. without anybody's tax dollars.
Yeah, I don't think the church is dying anytime soon.
depends on who you ask. But I think those are all great questions. What do atheists... All right, let's start this way. How do Christians tend to stereotype atheists?
I'm evil. Well, you got the emails. Like, why are you letting an atheist in this place? That's right there. What do you think's going to happen? Right. What do you think I'm going to do here?
Right. We were concerned that you might break God.
Well, right.
And
right.
That would be a problem.
I'm going to start jumping around, wrecking all the instruments on stage.
Please don't.
Find a baby, eat it.
Don't eat the babies. it makes people sad.
I know. Yeah. I don't know. But that's the thing. Like, it's... I've met people. I've been on dates with people where I'm afraid to say I'm an atheist. You and I'm sure it's the same thing for a lot of Christians too. Like, well, what do you believe? I'm not religious. Right. I'm spiritual.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. Like, but that's the thing. If you say you're an atheist, people get this negative image. Like, you must be angry. You must be. You're never going to smile, and you must hate Jesus. Well, no,
you engage in debauchery and reckless immorality at every. Right. Possible opportunity.
Exactly. And it's so far, I mean, it's so far from the truth. I've been to so many atheist conventions, and it's like, where is all the debauchery? I thought I would be seeing more of that.
They weren't nearly as much fun as you'd hope.
Not nearly.
All right. How does it flip? Like, how do atheists tend to stereotype people who would consider themselves people of faith?
It depends who we're talking about. I think one of the things I learned from going to all these churches is, you know, I had a very stereotypical image of what Christianity was all about. Yes, the Simpsons thing, but also, I mean, who are the Christian people you hear in the news? You hear the ones on the far right. You hear the ones who are very politically on the right. And it's very easy to think they tend to speak for so many people. I think one of the things I learned going to so many churches is there's a lot of people who... don't like that the church is political, even if they are on one side or the other. They don't want the church to be political. I've met Christians who vote Democrats. Who knew? Like, you know, but you meet Christians who don't like what goes on in the church. You meet Christians who hate that same perception, and they want to work to change that. I don't think a lot of atheists, I don't think a lot of people outside the church know that type of Christian exists, because all we're used to hearing are the ones that are... you know, trying to push the legislation, trying to get something into law, or the ones you hear on the culture wars. Like, that's the only type of Christian you ever hear. And gotcha. I've met people who are on the front lines of trying to change that.
Gotcha.
But I don't think other people know who they are or pay attention to them. I wish that changed. But I think that if you ask atheists what do they think about Christianity, I think what you saw in that video, I don't think that's too far off the mark. Right. I think the things you bring up in that series, like, oh, they're hypocritical, they're totally anti-gay, they hate everyone who's outside their little clique. I don't think that's far off the mark.
So for both camps that tend, or at least for the fringes in both camps that trend towards dogma, how do we figure out how to disagree with some measure of gentleness and mutual respect?
It has to come from within. Okay. I'm not going to convince anyone, and this is no disrespect to you guys, I'm not going to convince anyone at this church to change the way they're acting, I don't think. But you could. I don't think you're going to have much influence talking to a bunch of atheists and saying, you should listen to what Christians have to say.
Right.
But if I do that, maybe some of them will listen. So I think that's the first thing. I think that's the first way. You get them involved in dialogue. You have to make sure it's not just some shouting match.
Right.
Because that's what happens. And that's one of the reasons this publisher said, we want you to write this book. It wasn't because I'm this amazing writer or this amazing story. Part of it was because the conversation that was being fostered here was one of dialogue and respect. And like, yes, you believe something different, but here's why I disagree with you. Right. As opposed to, you're wrong, I want nothing to do with you, leave.
Gotcha.
It wasn't like that. And I think if we could foster more of that type of dialogue, I mean, one of the things I really liked, I was at a convention a couple years ago. This was an atheist convention. And there was an artist. He painted this image. It was an atheist kind of picture where they had things against religion and stuff.
Yeah.
But we had a panel discussing this photo. And on the panel was an art critic, was an atheist who pretty much agreed with the way the painting was looking, and a representative of a local campus Crusade for Christ chapter.
Okay.
Who added amazing things to the conversation. Because,
really?
And the fun thing was, you know, I was in the audience watching this thing, and he was raising questions that no one else on that panel would raise. And it was fun because, again, it's good to be challenged regardless of what you believe. And when you get someone to push those buttons, not in an aggressive, antagonistic sort of way, but just saying, why don't you think about this? or right. tell me what you think about this, or I read this book, why don't you read it? Tell me what you think about this passage. Those are the things I enjoy doing. I think a lot of atheists, and I'm sure Christians too, would like to do that.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to find people you could have that conversation with.
Do you find that most Christians are more prone to give books to atheists than they are to read books from atheists?
Yeah. Oh, I have so many Bibles, you have no idea. I have every Lee Strobel book, Josh McDowell book. Oh, they all give them to me. And they're like, if you just read this passage, you will believe. Read it. Don't, like, no. What do you right. want? I mean, and you're right. I mean, that's one of the problems. Like, if I give someone in this audience the God delusion, do I really think they're going to read it?
Yeah.
I don't know. And there aren't a lot of books you could give to people and say, like, here's what I believe. Because there just aren't a lot of books about atheists.
But for the people who aren't going to spend the money or take the time to read God Delusion, can you give like a 30-second premise? What's Doc, or who is Dawkins? What's he trying to say?
Well, Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, people like them. What they're trying to say is, look, some of them are arguing why they don't believe in God.
Okay.
They're not saying there is none because we can't know that. But they're saying, you know what? If you want a big spectrum here, we're not at the end of it. But we're a little away from it. We don't believe there is one. And here's why we don't think there is one.
Okay.
And they have their arguments as to, you know, here's our problem with the Bible. Here's our problem with Christianity. And it's not so much the culture or the churches. It has to do with the theology. That's right. what they try to do. Whether they're successful or not depends on who's reading the book, how you're responding to it. That's all well and good. But I think that's the gist of it. I think in the process of doing that, I know people who would never pick up a Richard Dawkins book or a Sam Harris book because it's just seen as blasphemy or heresy. Like,
right.
I don't want someone criticizing my God, and they don't want to pick it up. And that's a problem. And for the same reason, there's a lot of atheists who want nothing to do with some of those apologetic books, too.
Right.
But I think that's what they're trying to do, and I think some books are more successful than others. But I think there's more of those books coming out now, though, of people challenging faiths.
So you had all sorts of books sent your way. If you were going to recommend a book to somebody who's a follower of Jesus, who's trying to engage in the dialogue, what would be your text?
There's a great book called I Sold My Soul on eBay.
That will be the scripture. Will be the commentary?
I think it's a quick read, but Sam Harris's Letter to a Christian Nation is okay. a quick read, and I think it's something anyone could read, high school age or otherwise. Personally, Richard Dawkins' book is fine. It wasn't my favorite Richard Dawkins book, but it's a good book. I think Daniel Dennett's Breaking the Spell, he's just writing about religion as a whole. Why did religions begin? What influence do they have? Why should we follow them at times? Why should we not follow them? That's the book I was reading through it. I'm like, I've never thought of that stuff, and I've been reading all of these books.
Yeah.
So Daniel Dennett's book was great. But again, I think it's important. There isn't one book that's going to do it. There isn't an atheist Bible I could hand you and say, if you read this, everything will be fixed. It's not going to happen. You got to read a variety of things that are going to challenge what you think. I mean, and it's not hard to find books that challenge what Christians think, but, you know, go out there, look for them, go to a library, find something that challenges your belief and see if you can answer those questions.
Right.
Because if you can, great. And if you don't know the answer to it, ask your parents, ask your pastor. If they can't answer it, you know, then start thinking about it. I mean, there are some questions we can't answer. And if someone is telling you, this is the truth, this is what, don't let someone tell you, this is what you believe. Let them say, you know, here's why I believe this, and see if it makes sense for you. And
right.
if it does, all right. If it doesn't, that's okay. That's not a bad thing.
Right. I think that one of the things I've really, just as I read your book and had been to the blog and have been doing some research of my own, just so I can be informed. I don't even know where I'm ending on certain parts of that, the Dawkins dialogue, but just to be informed. And I think that in the film that I saw recently, the documentary, there was so much power in the answer, I don't know. And the thing that I love about what you're saying about certain atheists is saying, we can't know for certain that there isn't a God. And technically, using reason and logic and pure science, no Christian could reproduce God in a lab right in front of you. So they're not saying, I know for sure that there is a God. Here's my data. They're saying, I believe.
Even though a lot of Christians will say, oh, no, I know there's a God. He's spoken to me. But, I mean, I know what you're saying. And you're right. There are some atheists who are going to say that, there are going to be some atheists who say there is no God either. I think they're wrong. You can't know that.
So mature people can engage in a conversation that's tenuous and yeah. say, if we share any margin, it's in the questions
yeah.
that are still unresolved.
And I think you're right. And I think it's so important. You know, maybe I'm misquoting this or something. Carl Sagan, who died like 10 years ago, he was interviewed once, a great astronomer, like, or
yeah.
really talked, public understanding of science. Someone asked him once, do you believe there's life in outer space? And he said, I don't know. And they asked him, well, in your gut, what do you think? He's like, well, I try not to think with my gut. It's okay to say I don't know. And I think that's important. You know, if you ask an atheist or something, you know, where did we come from? You know, if there's no God, how did this earth come to be? And we could give you some vague notion of what science might seem to point to, but we don't know the answer. And that's okay. It's okay to say I don't know the answer. Instead of trying to come up with something on faith that you think answers the question. And I think one of the problems I have with religion is that it tries to answer all these questions that we really just don't have an answer to. And one of the things that I think is a problem for the church is as we learn more things about, you know, 50 years ago, we just learned what DNA was.
Right.
But before that, you know, well, how come kids look like their parents? Well, it's the way God wanted it. Right. But then we learned about DNA. It's like, well, God gets pushed back to just those fringes. And I don't think that's what faith wants. I don't think Christians want that either.
Right.
But if you just try to stick it in God, anytime you don't have an answer, I think that's a problem. So I think it's okay to say I don't know to some of these big questions.
That's great, and I think that one of the great things that people who are rationalists or people who are agnostic or atheists, skeptics, have to offer us is the challenge to think critically about what we say we believe. Because when I was watching this documentary, the thing that was most appalling is so many people would say, well, why do you believe that? Because the Bible says it. Why do you believe it? Because God told me so. And it's okay to be able to say, well, because the scriptures teach this. It's important to know why do the scriptures teach this. And if there are chunks of the Old Testament, Intertestament, New Testament that you don't understand, to be able to say, you know what, I need to ask some more questions about this, as opposed to just saying, well, I don't know, God made it that way for a reason, I'm not going to talk about it. Because I had a friend who said, we need not fear science. He goes, we don't have to fear disciplines like biology or physics or astronomy. We need to be able to say, when we engage those topics, we don't have to be afraid. And again, these are my words, my words quoting him. He goes, we don't have to be afraid that something's going to jump out from underneath a rock and eat God. And if it does, we should fall down and worship that. Well, what he's saying is that the disciplines have nothing to intimidate us with. They're worth pursuing with all integrity.
And I think that's great. I mean, if you can, and what's hard to do is to find someone to challenge what you believe. Because, I mean, and this goes for me too, I'm sure, you know, when you're in a family that is religious or when you're coming to a church like this surrounded by religious people, it's hard to find people who are going to question what it is you believe. And that's important for you to figure out on your own. I mean, if I may, like, if by a show of hands, how many of you know someone who is an atheist? I see a lot of hands up, but there's a lot of hands not going up. My guess would be that most of the people whose hands are not up do know an atheist, they just don't know that they know an atheist. And I think that's one of the problems. I think if you know someone who is, like, this is an important discussion to have. And I don't think it's something you should shy away from. I think if you go into it, letting them know, look, I'm not here to try to convert you here, but I want to know why you think, how come they don't believe what you believe? Find out why that is.
Yeah.
And by all means, challenge them right back. I mean, I don't know very many instances where anyone's come out a winner in that sort of a debate, but just throwing those questions out there and having that sort of conversation is really important.
It's awesome.
Hey, Danny, is it okay if we field a couple questions that we have? So it looks like we got a little handful. Thanks so much. You guys having fun so far? Three of you over here. This one says, finish this sentence. It says, God is, and it has an ellipsis. Or maybe you can say, belief in God is.
God is make-believe.
Okay. Because you would ultimately say that belief in God is irrational.
Belief in God, I don't think, is irrational. I think people have very good reason for believing in God.
Okay.
I don't think that makes it true that God exists. But I think people have very good reasons for believing in God wanting to believe in God.
What are some of those reasons?
They need a way. I think a lot of people have no idea what they would do if they stopped believing in God. What would they do if they started having doubts about their faith? They don't know what they would do. And so I'm not saying they cling to their God or anything like that, but I'm saying, you know, they believe in their God because it gives them a path to follow. It brings hope. It brings happiness to their life. Those are good reasons to believe in a God. I don't think that makes God real, but I think those are valid reasons for someone to believe. I understand that.
So in the Bill Maher movie, he actually goes into a truck stop and has a very interesting conversation with a bunch of truckers about Jesus. And at the end of that conversation, he ends up walking away saying that he thinks that his skepticism is a privilege. That because he never had a hard life that required him to need God, he was born into a relatively sound family, decent economic status, had the privilege of having an education. He was privileged to be born in a worldview that didn't allow him to need God. What do you think about that?
I think there are a lot of atheists who have been through hard times. They were atheists before the thing. I know a girl personally in a wheelchair. She was in a horrible car accident years ago. She can't walk. Before that accident happened, she was an atheist. She didn't believe that God existed. After that happened, and I think for a lot of people, they would say, I mean, that's a horrible reason, but her reasons didn't change for why God didn't exist. Yes, she didn't have a hard life beforehand, but that wasn't the reason she became an atheist. It's, you don't need this tragedy. You don't have to have this traumatic life to be an atheist. One of the churches I went to, they actually asked people, as kind of a little service, everyone in the audience, they gave a piece of paper, and they said on one side, write how you felt. These are all born-again Christians.
Yeah.
Write how you felt before you were born again. And then on the other side of the page, write how you felt after you accepted Jesus into your life.
Yeah.
And then they invited some of these people to come on stage and share their things. And all the befores were all like, I hated myself, I was depressed, I was sad. And afterwards, they were joyous and exuberant and happy. It's like, how come it seems like a prerequisite for all these people that something horrible had to happen in their life before they could accept Christ? Isn't it possible that you don't have to have a bad life to not be a Christian? Isn't it possible you could have a good life and accept Jesus at the same time? I mean, so Bill Maher was saying that, you know, he had this privileged life. He didn't have to go through anything. Well, that's not, I don't really buy that as a good or bad reason to believe or not to believe.
I think what I find fascinating are people who had relatively contented lives. They found Christ. Things got worse, and they retained their faith.
Yeah.
That's what I find problematic. I mean, Shane Claiborne says, everybody else talks about how their life was messed up. They found Jesus, and it was great. He goes, my life was fine. I met Jesus, and he screwed it up. So, yeah. What are those guys? Are they just, like, delusional? Are they gluttons for punishment?
No, I mean, if you believe in the story, then that's going to influence how you do things. And if you believe, you have to take the good in with the bad.
Right.
And if you have to take it, you got to take it all. And I can understand someone saying, you know, everything was fine, and if Jesus came in and everything that comes with it, yeah, there's going to be some good with the bad. I think that goes both ways.
Gotcha. This person says, have you read the Gospels? What do you think of the teachings of Jesus?
I think most of I have read the Gospels. I haven't read all of the Bible. I've read large portions of it.
Yep.
Most of the teachings are fine. It would be nice if Christians followed them.
That's what Gandhi says.
For the most part, I'm fine with it. I don't think he was as perfect as people seem to make him out to be, but I think that makes him more endearing.
Okay.
Where
are your holes in the perfection of Jesus?
Where are the holes? I think his family life wasn't something I would want. I mean, he kind of distanced himself from his family. I think the way he spoke didn't always make sense to the people who were trying to follow what he was saying. Mm-hmm. I think he had a temper at times in the way when people weren't understanding what he was saying.
Yeah.
Which is fine. That's human. That's going to happen.
Yeah, and I guess the thing that I love about Jesus is, like, a lot of the skeptics that I hear, they're angry about the oppression of religion.
Yeah. And I don't want to see religion being oppressed.
And the thing that evoked Jesus' most anger was exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
So is Jesus a skeptic?
I think you just blew everyone's mind.
Well, when it comes to the oppression of religion, Jesus talked about religion as a yoke. Jesus saved his harshest criticism for the people who were trying to bind and manipulate and control and conform people into their politics and their worldview.
And that's not something I want to see either. I want to see people have the freedom to choose whether they believe or not believe and whatever it is they want to believe.
And if at the end of the day I get as angry about religion as Jesus did, my hope is that my life will have been worthwhile.
Hmm.
We'll see. Do you have one favorite church experience? If yes, what exactly made it your favorite?
Favorite church experience. That's a very vague word, I'm trying to think. I mean, I had good experiences. My favorite experiences were when I had a chance to walk in to a church. I felt like I was part of their community. I felt like no one was staring at me because I was like the one brown person in a sea of white.
Right.
Or that they
Sorry
knew...
about that.
I mean, I wasn't walking in with, like, a notebook and a computer or something. I just, you know, came in by myself and just sat through these sermons. But when I heard an interesting sermon, when I heard a sermon that was something I could think about, I learned a story maybe in the Bible that I didn't know so well. Yeah. I like those experiences. The ones I didn't like, there's a whole slew of them.
Gotcha. This person says, how would you define an atheist?
How would I define an atheist?
Many of my Christian friends define atheists as a person who is going to hell and not to hang out with them. How would you define an atheist?
Here's my definition of an atheist, and I'm sure there's contention even among people about this. To me, an atheist is someone who doesn't believe there is a God.
Okay.
That's it. It doesn't tell you anything about my political views, doesn't tell you where I stand on any of the issues. It's one answer to one question. Perfect. Do you believe in God? No. I think an agnostic is someone who just says, you know what, I'm not really convinced either way. I'm not going to take a position on it because I can't know. And I think that's okay, too. I think I'm much more leaning towards the idea that there won't be one. Okay. So that's why I call myself an atheist.
Are you still participating in nonviolence? If so, what is your rationale?
I try not to beat people up.
That's good.
Do I still participate in nonviolence? I'm not sure what the implication of that is.
Maybe what they're saying is that you have convictions that were rooted in the faith of your family of origin that you have retained.
I still, if I see a spider in my apartment, I don't want to kill it.
Okay.
I want to catch it and let it go. I'm still a vegetarian. I was a vegetarian for religious reasons going up because I don't think it's right to kill animals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still a vegetarian, but for different reasons. It's not a religious reason. It's that reason. So in that sense, I still consider myself nonviolent and hopefully not violent in other ways.
Good. All right.
I try not to eat the babies, you know.
That's good. I think we've established
really hard.
No on the baby eating. All right. So what factors solidified in your mind that God does not exist? What factors?
What factors solidify that he doesn't?
And this one says ones that aren't Kirk Cameron.
I think the biggest thing is that I think a lot of the things I hear my religious friends say, I believe in God because, you know, I met my husband or wife at a, not at a church function even, but, you know, I went to this party, I wasn't going to go to it, but when I went there, I met my significant other. That was God's doing. And I'm thinking, well, that's nice. But there are good explanations for why that sort of thing happened that don't involve God. All the reasons people say, I know God exists because of this and this and this, I could give explanations to those same things that my explanations don't involve God.
So if I can't prove my theories and you can't prove your theories, where do we land?
I think the issue I have is when you can't prove it one way or the other, it doesn't make sense to me to say, well, there was this. They make up a reason for it, even though they believe that reason, but they think God did it. And again, when it comes down to it, if you don't know the answer, why did you meet that person at the party? Because you just met that person at the party. There wasn't a rhyme or reason behind it, but you know, you take so many paths in life, something's going to happen.
So you say it was fate, you say it was chance, I say it was destiny. Is it okay for me to think it's destiny as long as I don't yell at you calling it chance?
Is it okay for you to think? I think I would still want to argue with you over why I think you're wrong. That's natural.
Okay.
But I mean, that's not where my passion lies in proving
people
wrong.
Yeah. Why do so many Christians get amped about proving people wrong?
I don't know.
Dallas Willard, who's a professor of psychology at University of Southern California, said, "Unfortunately, most Christians have made a higher priority out of being right than they have out of being kind." And Jesus says the highest law is the law of love, not the law of debate.
I raised this question on my site, and the question is this. If I became a Christian, or if anyone in this audience, I'm assuming most of the people here are Christ believers, if any of you lost your faith, how many of your relationships with people you know would change? Like, how close would you be to your family if that happened? Things like that. And I don't know. I think if I all of a sudden became a Christian, there's some relationships that would disappear. And I'm wondering, you know, that's a bone of contention. A lot of reason people don't come out as atheists is because they don't want to lose a lot of these relationships that they have. And if Christians focus more on the love part instead of being right, I think a lot of those people wouldn't be so afraid of coming out and explaining who they are. It's nice to walk among Christians. You know, people maybe are surprised that I have friends that are close friends who are Christian. And it's because I don't feel like there's a target on my back every time I talk to them. They're not trying to convert me at every turn. They're more interested in the loving part of the relationship than they are, like, trying to convince me that I'm wrong and that I'm hellbound. So,
but how do you have normal interactions with them if their, like, entire worldview is based on a fallacy?
We can talk about those issues.
Okay.
And, you know, it's fine. We could talk about, I know where they're coming, I understand where they're coming from. I know there's some things we're going to disagree on. And at some point, like, no more arguing is going to change that.
Right.
And we could, there are plenty of other things we could talk about that don't have to do with our views that we could get along with and stuff like that.
If there is a God, should God have the capacity to defend himself?
How so?
To prove himself to whoever needs evidence, as opposed to trusting mortal peons to do it for?
That would be great. Hey, if God exists, by all means, show me. But that's one of the things. Like, people are like, you know, if you just open your heart, then God will come through. What does that mean? If I let myself believe in God, then I'm going to believe? Like, that's not a good reason to believe in something.
Right.
And what happens if I don't? What are you going to think about me? Are you going to think differently of me if I do what you're saying, or I think about this issue and I don't come to the same conclusion?
So there are believers who never really act with their minds. Are there rationalists or skeptics who don't always act with their minds? Like,
yeah.
is it possible to be a hypocritical rationalist?
I mean, I
to make gut-based decisions instead of reason-induced, data-driven ones?
There are those people in every bunch. And yeah, I think there are fewer among the atheists that I've met that do things that just don't make any sense to a lot of people. Hey, I know atheists who believe in, like, horoscopes or in superstitious stuff, which boggles my mind because
right.
That doesn't make any sense either to me.
Right.
But there are those types of things in every crowd. And yeah, it's going to happen.
So, like, in countries in Western Europe, like France, where people who consider themselves irreligious is skyrocketing, at the same time, people who consider themselves, like, neo-pagan or into astrology is picking up with, like, a correlating rate.
Yeah.
What do we do with that?
I have no idea. I mean, that's...
Is that perplexing to the skeptic?
That's perplexing to me. I think it's perplexing to a lot of people. I don't understand why, if you're not religious, you cling to other things. Like, you know, it seems to me that people want something that they could rely on when an atheist like myself doesn't think there's anything there. So even though you might lose a religious belief, the idea that there might be something you could hang on to that might give you that hope, that might give you something to look forward to, they want to have something in their life. And if it's not God, maybe it's something else. That's the only explanation I might be able to think of.
So is there an innate human craving to develop meaning of some kind?
Oh, I think there is. I think we all want those explanations. Like, why are we here? Where are we going to go after we die? Those are important questions. And I think everyone wants those answers. I don't think we can find them. But
so
I think everyone has their way of explaining those answers.
Don't hear me wrong on this one, but if death is absurd, it's just, it doesn't have meaning, it's part of the natural biological process, is there room for grief in the skeptic worldview?
Is there room for
grief? Like, does grief make sense? Because death was an inevitable reality. We're kind of biological beings. Biological beings die. Lions don't cry for their dead. Why should we cry for ours?
Because we've lost someone we're connected with. And anytime that bond goes away, that's going to be sad. I mean, yeah, there's definitely room for grief. One of the questions I got asked is, like, well, if death is the end-all be-all of everything and there is no afterlife, like, why do you go on living? Like, what's the purpose of your life? Why do you do that? And, you know, I'm just thinking, have you ever been on vacation? You knew the vacation was going to end. Did you just not go? Like, no, you want to live it.
Right.
You have this life. You might as well make the most of it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is there room to grieve? Yeah, there's room to grieve because you like those bonds. You make those bonds and you build them. And then all of a sudden it goes away? Yeah, that's really sad. And I think, you know, one of the experiences that you never hear really people talk about is, what do atheists do at a funeral? You know? Because, you know, what do you talk about? Or the joke is like, oh, there's an atheist in a coffin, like, all dressed up, no place to go.
Nice.
Something like that. Like, but, like, what happens at an atheist? What happens?
It's rich. That's good.
But what happens at an atheist funeral is something. It's... In most cases that I've heard of, or people that I've talked to who have lost a loved one, who was an atheist, who didn't want a religious funeral or something, they talk about things that I think are pretty similar in a lot of cases. They talk about, they celebrate the life that was lived.
Mm-hmm.
They celebrate the memories that person's going to leave behind instead of where that person's going to go now that they're gone.
Right, right. So you talked about, there's a bunch of questions here about altruism, and you talked about doing... something for an elderly couple in a neighborhood with a bunch of Christians. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, actually, this thing happened. This couple contacted me about a year ago, and they said, hey, look, we're part of a church. We want to do something nice we want to do some community service. We want to do something nice for someone. Do you want to join us? As it turned out, I was going out of town that weekend. I couldn't join them. But they told me what happened. And what they said is, you know, they basically invited all of their friends, whether they're in the church or not in any church. They just invited people, as many as they could find. They asked the mayor of the town, like, do you know anyone who could use our help? And he said, there's an elderly couple. I think the guy is a World War II veteran. They're very old. They're alone. And their house is kind of run down. I'm sure you could help them with that. So this group, and again, some people from the church. It wasn't a church event. It was just some people from the church and some people who are not, and people from other faiths, no faiths, whatever. They got together. They went to this couple's house. They took them in, like, a van. They took them to, like, a hotel for the weekend. And they put them up in a hotel for the weekend. While they were gone, this group of people fixed up their house as best they could. They did the whole, like, extreme home makeover type of thing. Yeah, where they brought them back. And they're like, here's what we did to your house. And they, big surprise, and, like, can you imagine what that couple was feeling and how amazing that these people do something nice for you? That's the sort of thing that I wish atheists did more of. I'm glad, like, I was kind of jealous that it had to be a Christian couple that thought of that. Why? How come my people weren't thinking of that? And I think what I like to see, there was a group, an atheist group at Champaign-Urbana in Illinois.
Yeah.
They wanted to do something good over spring break. They didn't have the money to kind of go down to New Orleans and, like, help out with Katrina victims.
Right.
So they're like, well, who might be able to help us get down there? Campus Crusade for Christ. So they contacted their local chapter and they said, look, we want to come down with you if that's okay, and we'll pitch in and do what we can. So they went with them, and they went together to New Orleans, and they kind of joined up with what Campus Crusade was doing. And, like, that's such a cool story. That's awesome. Why aren't more people doing stuff like that? But I don't think that's something that should be relegated just to Christianity, or religious people only do that sort of thing. I mean, if we call ourselves humanists, atheists, if we want to help other people because this is the only life we have, we might as well help other people while we're here. We should be doing more of that. And that's one of the things I try to tell other people who are not religious.
I might be understanding it wrong, but Dawkins in The Selfish Gene is skeptical about the evolutionary basis for altruism.
I don't think he is. When I've read that book, when he talks about a selfish gene, what he's saying is our genes want to survive. They'll do whatever it takes to survive. That doesn't mean we're selfish. That just means our genes want to live on. And that explains certain behaviors of ours, why we want to live on, why we want to keep these memories intact.
So helping the elderly couple fix their house, how does that propel the race?
Well, let me ask you, and I'll answer your question, but how does that help you as a Christian by helping them?
I've been given a mandate to love.
And so what do you get out of helping them?
In theory, I shouldn't have to get anything at all.
Well, and that's, I think that's my answer too. Like, it's something good. You have the capability of doing something nice for other people. I don't believe there's a heaven, but I do think we could create something like a heaven on earth. The way that's going to happen is if we work together, help each other. No, you're not going to get something eternal out of it, but according to you, you're not either. This is just, you know, this is something you as a Christian should be doing.
Yeah.
And I think just, well, you know what? I'm a human being, you know, ask not for whom the bell tolls. We all have to help each other. We're all in this together.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess one of the things that was curious is he just said that the altruism appears at first to be an evolutionary paradox, since helping others costs precious resources and decreases one's own fitness.
But I think he also goes on to say, if we help other people, and I think the evolutionary explanation for why we help other people is if you don't have the conscience to think about it, well, you help other people in the hopes that they'll help you back.
Okay.
I think we move beyond that because we could think about what we're doing and how we react to that. We could do things for other people without needing a reward in return, and we're fine. We're not in danger of survival or anything like that, so we have that ability to do good things for other people. Okay. So why not?
We're not in danger of survival?
Our species isn't going away anytime in the near future. Like, no one's trying to kill humans, and we have to, like, struggle to survive. So, yeah, we have the capability of doing good things for other people without worrying about our own survival.
Yeah. So one thing that I found fascinating was that, Danny, come up if you got another one. One of the things I found fascinating is on the Dawkins site, he just said that he feels like he's on a mission to advance reason. Well, how do you engage people who aren't reasonable? Like, I have a friend who was encountering, like, a really fiery street preaching imam in Amsterdam. And he goes, well, I don't agree. Your arguments are breaking down here, 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 and here. And he goes, I don't care what you say. We'll just keep having children until we get our way.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I think there's some people that you're not going to be able to reach. And I think we have to accept that. But I think there are more people than we think who are willing to have that conversation and dialogue. And it's not that their beliefs aren't secure.
Yep.
They could be pretty hardcore Christians, but you could still have that conversation with them. You could still talk to them, and they want to have that conversation with you. They want to tell you why they believe what they believe, and that's fine. And I think those are the people you have to talk to. And I think, I mean, I don't know if you're going to reach some of these people that are like, here's what I believe. And if the second someone challenges them, they're like, I don't care what you have to say. This is what I believe. Like, you're not going to reach some of them. Okay. And I hope more people don't want to be like that brand of faith. I would hope more people want this more thoughtful nature of like, you know, for especially for the kids here that are growing up in this church environment, you learn certain things in the church. But I hope at some point you figure out like, well, why am I learning this? How do I know this is true? And you go on that search. And right. If you find your answer, fine, so be it. But that's the sort of thing we need to teach our kids. It's how do you question? How do you know that what you're learning is true?
Right.
That's not a church thing. That's in general. And if you teach them those things, hopefully, I mean, for as far as I know, that's going to make them stronger Christians.
Right.
Or that'll make them stronger atheists. That's not my concern here. But getting people to question what they believe, if you're not doing that, that's a problem. And you're not going to reach those people who don't do that. But I think more people are willing to examine their beliefs.
Awesome. Let me read you one more. This just says, thank you for your courage in visiting our church and all the churches. Thanks for sharing your personal journey with us and its truth.
I appreciate
it. I want to thank you as well, because I think that the critique that is laid out in the book is driving me back to the person and the message of Jesus and trying to say, if this is what you're experiencing and this is the blueprint, then there is a gap.
Right. So you're coming to the atheist convention in a couple weeks, right?
If you will let me sell my brain on eBay, I will come.
Awesome.
All right? Thanks so much, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. Thanks for making time.